Hello, everybody. Bill Buckmaster, along with my friend Tom Fairbanks, Tom engineering and producing the show on the other side of the glass. And together, we welcome you to the Buckmaster Show on this Friday, April 28th, another very windy, dusty day, which is not good news for the folks who are fighting the fire near Sonoyta. We'll have an update on that later in the program. It is the Buckmaster Show, and we want to do a big Friday shout-out to all of our media partners. These are people who support our program by conveniently posting our link, or the link to the Buckmaster Show, on their website, TucsonSentinel.com, Inside Tucson Business, the Green Valley News, and Sahorita Sun, TucsonLifestyle.com, Southern Arizona News Examiner, and the Three Sonorans, big supporters, all of them, of our work. Our Friday Focus interview today, State Senator Steve Farley is with us, a Democrat who represents the Tucson area in District Number 9. With me to talk with Senator Farley, Dan Scheer of, speaking of, the Green Valley News and Sahorita Sun. Dan is the editor of those two fine papers. And a big shout out to Dan before we get to Senator Farley. Dan, you really broke that story about who might be responsible for the fire down in Sahorita.
Yeah, and I was out at the scene of the fire a couple of hours after it broke out on Sunday, and the rumors were already swirling then, and then it took us a couple of days to nail it down.
Steve Farley, good to see you.
Always great to be here.
Tell me, we had a declared candidate for governor on the program, a declared Democratic hopeful, a gentleman who ran unsuccessfully against Diane Douglas for the superintendent of public education job, and Dr. David Garcia is now running officially. You've talked with us a couple of months ago that you were going to take a serious look at it. Give us an update.
Well, I'll tell you, I've been out there. I've been going all over the state talking with a lot of people. And it's been very encouraging what I've been hearing. I've been raising a lot of money for the state Democratic Party because I think we need a strong party for everybody in this time, and that's been going very well. And I think I'll be making an announcement somewhere in the next 6 weeks.
Are you waiting till the session ends?
As most of your listeners will know, there's been a lot going on in the legislature this year, so that's kept my hands full for quite some time, and not everything that's gone on in the legislature has been terribly good.
Will the session end perhaps even at the end of next week?
There is a real, I think that the real possibility is that we end early Thursday morning and then we'll be done for good, at least for this session. There's some talk about a possible special session shortly thereafter about allowing the governor to negotiate for the Indian Gaming Compact. No word on that one yet, but if the folks get everything together, I think we could be out here next week, and then we'll all be a little bit safer.
How can you do that though? Present a budget, and then within hours you're done.
This has been the tradition of this Republican majority for as long as I've been in there. Is you get a budget, and you ram it through in 3 days, and your final debate and vote is literally in the middle of the night.
Where is the public debate?
It's on the floor of the Senate and the House. There's very limited testimony in the Appropriations Committees as they come through. And you can watch from the gallery.
Dan Scheer, take over.
Well, you've been working on this for a decade, but we finally did get a texting while driving ban through. It was signed this week, but it's pretty weak.
Yeah, this one has to have an asterisk, a couple of asterisks after it. It only bans the first 6 months of a driver's driving career, meaning that it's and only if you're under 18. So basically, if you're a 16-year-old, get your license. At 16 and a half, you can feel free to text away while driving. It's still legal in Arizona, not in certain municipalities, but in the state law. And to me, that's just ridiculous. Even the governor said that he might even support banning cell phone use while drivers under 18. But that's still not enough. We just saw last month there was a 20-year-old texting driver who slaughtered 13 church elders in Texas, where Texas has a law that bans cell phone use for drivers under 18, but not a statewide law. There's only four states that don't have an overall statewide ban for everyone. We're still one of those four states, and that has to change.
Why take a baby step? Why not just move forward? Is that
exactly
going to be a follow-up question?
I was just going to ask you that.
There
are smaller bans the way to arrive at a full-scale ban?
No, Not. I mean, we're not on the bleeding edge here. I introduced this ban for the first in the country in January 2007. Now 46 states have the complete ban. And studies have shown that when you are texting while driving or surfing Facebook or whatever else you're doing on your smartphone, you're just as incapacitated as when you're drunk. Or even more so.
Well, I'm trying to figure out the logic behind this because the governor has said that he thinks public awareness campaigns are the thing that really work, but it seems like he has contradicted that in signing this bill. So his philosophy isn't quite consistent here. So either it's good or it's bad. And I think this is one of those bipartisan type issues where it's just not a good idea to be doing that while you're driving.
It's a completely bipartisan issue. 90% of Arizonans agree we need a full statewide ban for everyone, whether they're red or blue, because it doesn't matter what party you are when someone runs into you and kills you. And when as an interesting exercise, I took the governor's signing letter about this, in which he said he was skeptical about the effects of a full ban, and I replaced the words distracted driving and driving while texting with the word drunk. And if you want to see what that looks like, go on my Facebook page. It's an interesting post.
The governor has talked about zero. It's been no secret that he would like to zero out state income tax. Is that fair to say?
Oh, yeah. He promises he's going to do a cut every year. He wants to eliminate the state income tax, which would have the same effect that President Trump's proposal is having right now, which is a massive giveaway of taxes from the have-nots to the haves.
Do you think it's still on his agenda?
It certainly would be on his agenda. I think he hasn't found a politically realistic way to be able to do it yet. But we have seen a lot of efforts of moving away from taxes that are progressive and moving towards taxes that are regressive. We have one of the highest sales taxes here in the country, and yet we keep giving away loopholes to the well-connected who can hire corporate lobbyists to get a special break. And that's not fair.
One of the things holding up the budget, according to your colleague from the community of Maricopa, the Republican State Senator Steve Smith, who was our guest this week as well, saying that the holdup is the bonding issue for the universities on the maintenance.
Well, the bonding issues of universities is simply allowing them an opportunity to finally get a little bit on the black side of the ledger instead of the red side of the ledger after this legislature and these governors have cut our universities by $2.5 billion over the last, since 2008, actually. If they have an opportunity to put a little bit aside every year, I think this is looking about $30 million every year, then they would be able to leverage that and get about $1 billion worth of bonding capacity and potentially get more to be able to help recover some of the costs that they've lost from these cuts. That one of the controversial parts that I also disagreed with was that the governor originally wanted to take this money from cities and counties in the form of state shared revenues. I've been talking with some of the Republicans behind the scenes and have been able to convince them and to get general agreement. And I understand that that's in the general agreement when the budget will be coming down, that the cities and counties will be held harmless by this. So the money that would come for the bonding would probably come from a general fund infusion.
Dan?
But even if we saw university cuts restored, or at least some of them, we're still talking growing tuition and fees for students, and it's doubtful that that would be cut. That's a huge issue here, too.
It is a huge issue. And when you look at a scatter plot about state universities, and you on one axis it shows what percentage of cuts they've had since 2008, and the other axis is how much the tuition has gone up since 2008. We are by far the outlier on both regards. So we're way out there in the upper right corner of the scatter plot. That's not where we should be, because we need to be doubling down on our higher ed spending as well as we are on all of our education spending in a time now when our economy is beset by the twin challenges of globalization and automation. If we invest in our universities, then we'll be inventing the new industries of the future, and we won't have to bribe those new companies to come here. They'll be here already. That's a great investment, and I think we can find any way to be able to help restore these cuts. We should.
But specifically, how do you lower tuition and fees, though? I agree with you on the cuts, but does that translate necessarily into good news for students?
I think one good way to look at this is you don't necessarily want to lower tuition. You want to increase financial aid. Because one of the things we have in our college system, our university system, is that we have out-of-state people who pay a whole lot of money. And some of that money goes into a system in which we can subsidize the people who don't have a lot of money and need financial aid in-state. because one of the things we really need to do is focus on getting folks at the lower end of the scale into a university education in order to reduce the poverty in this state. We've got a real crisis where 1 in 4 kids under 18 are living in poverty right now, and that's not going to help us move forward. Education is the best tool we've ever created at lifting people out of poverty, and we should be investing in it.
Senators eased the requirements for teacher certifications. And again, when I was speaking with Senator Smith, your colleague in the Senate, he said Sandra Day O'Connor wouldn't have been able to teach in Arizona because it would have been difficult for her to have a teaching certificate. So this will make it much easier for people to get into the classroom.
Well, his allegation is absolutely false. And it was also false when Governor Ducey said the same thing in his State of the State. Actually, Justice O'Connor has the capability of being credentialed into a classroom. She just needs to take a little course in classroom management. And that's part of the whole flaw of this entire thing. Governor Ducey and this legislature has billed this as a way of solving the teacher crisis. Mm-hmm. 44% of our teachers leave after 2 years. But you don't solve a teacher crisis when you're lowest in pay in the country for teacher salaries by simply lowering your standards. That's not the way you do it. If you throw someone in the classroom without any additional credentialing or training in classroom management, then the kids, they won't know how to handle a classroom, and the kids aren't going to learn the great knowledge they may have. And the chances are the teacher will get frustrated and they'll leave after 1 year. And you haven't solved your problem at all. You've just lowered standards and you've insulted all the teachers who are currently working for very little money, who worked really hard to get their credentials so that they could be effective teachers. It's a terrible approach to the problem. We need to get over it and just fund our education system adequately. We can't be last in the country anymore. We can't afford it.
All right, we're going to take our break right here. It's 12:16 on the Buckmaster Show. Senator Farley will stick around if you'd like to join in the conversation. Our live line number is 790-2040. We'll be right back on the Buckmaster Show. Dan Scheer also sticks around right after this. The excitement is building for the grand opening in 2017 for the Twisted Tandoor. The legendary Indian food truck will now have a permanent brick-and-mortar home at Swan and Camp Lowell Drive. The menu will be an expansion of the Indian classic offerings from the original Twisted Tandoor food truck. The Twisted Tandoor, coming in 2017 at 4660 East Camp Lowell Drive. This is Bill Buckmaster. One of my passions is travel, visiting over 100 countries in all 50 states. When I'm ready to take off, I fly from Tucson International Airport, with 6 airlines flying nonstop to 19 destinations and easy one-stop connections. I can get virtually anywhere in the world. It's close by, convenient, with competitive airfares, and the best part is there's no long drive coming back home after a long trip. Check out flytucson.com, travel smart, and fly Tucson. It's the way to go. The Regional Transportation Authority and its members are working together to deliver transportation improvements to our region. More than 770 improvements have been completed to date. The success of the RTA is built upon collaboration and leadership that focuses on addressing our regional mobility needs to make our region a safer, more efficient, and more vibrant place to live. Better roads, better transit, better choices, a better future. More at rtamobility.com. On a changing planet, the University of Arizona's Biosphere 2 has been diving deeper and looking closer while energizing, innovating, conserving, and advancing science on an unparalleled scale to better understand the natural systems around us and to inspire our future generations. For 10 years now, UA Biosphere 2 has explored our planet's future. Come, explore it yourself. Open daily, biosphere2.org.
At the Pima County Public Library, we are powering possibilities. Every day, in person and online, we help you connect, learn, create, and achieve your dreams. Come browse our shelves or take a class, pursue your passion, and connect with others. Do you dream big? We do. Anything is possible at your local library. Call 791-4010 or visit library.pima.gov to be inspired today.
Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
This is Bill Buckmaster, coming up Monday at noon on Buckmaster, the Monday Political Face-Off featuring commentators Vince Robigo and John Munger, plus former United States Army Chief of Staff General John Wickham with the latest on the situation in Korea. On Buckmaster on AM 1030 KVOI with worldwide live listening podcasts and archive on my website, buckmastershow.com. Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show on this Friday, April the 28th, but perhaps it's not Friday. You're listening to our re-airing of the program on Saturday afternoon. Our program re-airs the Friday edition at 4 o'clock on KVOI, so we get two airings of the Friday program. The Friday Focus interview is with State Senator Steve Farley, District 9 Democrat, who is very close to announcing his candidacy for governor on making a run for the gubernatorial office. Dan Scheer is here, editor of the Green Valley News and Saharita Sun. Let's go right to the live line. We have Carl, who is with us first. Go ahead, Carl.
Yes, Senator, you were talking about educational financing.
Yes.
Where the additional money is going to come from. About 50% of the Arizona budget is locked in place by mandated federal actions or by voter initiatives. And out of the remaining 50%, you're going to have to be covering things like fire, which we've got now down in Greenbelt. You've got the state mine inspector. You've got the highway departments, all of those things. So, you know, I'm looking at it here as an outsider, and I'm just kind of wondering, where are you going to take money from in order to get more money into education? The only alternative that I see is raising taxes, and that's going to be an issue for a lot of people.
Well, okay. when you're looking at 50% of our state budget, it's a shrunk budget from what happened as corporate tax cuts were given away. $4 billion a year we've given away since 1996. So 50% of 9.5 billion is a little different from what percentage we'll have of 13.5 billion if we hadn't given away those tax cuts. But without raising taxes, and this is what I'm supporting and what I've supported for years, we need to finally get a handle on the tax loopholes in our sales tax code. There are 12.2 billion, and that's just the ones that have been enumerated, because a lot of them we don't know how much we're losing. 331 special interest corporate tax loopholes that have gotten placed in there over the decades, which never get reviewed. There are things like, I've talked many times about the 4-inch pipe exemption. You pay sales tax on 3-inch pipes, but not 4-inch pipes, because Southwest Gas went down to the legislature in the 70s and made a good argument as to why they shouldn't pay sales taxes. That has bled off as much as $18 million a year from our general fund. If we can take $2 billion out of that $12 billion, $2 billion, then we would be able to lower our sales tax rate by a full per penny and increase our education funding by $1 billion a year. That's what we need to get serious about. It's time to overcome the special interests and actually pay attention to what the people want to invest in.
All right, back to the live line. Chuck would like to speak with Senator Farley. Hey, Chuck.
Thank you for taking my call, Senator Farley. I want to talk about HERF funds.
Highway user funds,
yeah.
Okay?
Okay. Mm-hmm. In the last 9 years, this county, Pima County, has received over $680 million. Now, our roads are still a total mess. Now, what I am wondering is, why can't somebody put forth some legislation that will close and restrict exactly what that money can be spent for.
Okay.
In other words, basically roads and maybe emergency equipment.
All right.
And
thank
that's
you.
It. Nothing thank else.
Well, yeah, here's the problem. I've actually had bills to do that specifically in the legislature that have been turned down by this legislative majority because our Constitution says that our gas taxes can only be spent on roads. You'd think that would be cut and dried. But this governor and this legislative majority have continued to take away our gas tax funds and spend them to balance the budget. Governor Ducey's own proposed budget this year proposed stealing another $90 million from our gas taxes and using it to balance his budget. Now, the good news is, from what I hear inside, the budget that could be coming out next week will fix some of that. It won't allow the governor to take $90 million from it because there's a growing bipartisan majority in the legislature that doesn't want the money to be stolen. We need to invest them. It's already shrinking money from our gas taxes because we're using less gas. We've got higher mileage cars. Some people don't pay gas tax at all when they have an electric vehicle. We can't make it worse by stealing the little money we do have. I agree 100%. We need to put that money into our roads that we're supposed to be collecting in gas taxes.
All right. Here is Dan Scheer.
You talked about special interests and some tax breaks. I want to revisit that. Representative Daniel Hernandez, who's from down in my area, introduced House Bill 2418. And I know you were in the Senate, but the bill would have eliminated the tax on feminine hygiene products, diapers, baby formula. It didn't go anywhere. But what did you think of that bill? And isn't that's a tax break or a tax cut, isn't it?
Yeah, and I am dubious about any tax break that's going through.
You would not have supported that?
I wouldn't have supported that bill because ultimately I think that we shouldn't be limiting further at this time of crisis in which people in poverty are being hurt the most by the sales tax breaks that are happening in this code. We've seen plenty of tax breaks going out to all different sorts of sources. If you can make the case for it, I mean, that's fine, but you can't make the case for things like another bill that we saw this year was a bill that would have eliminated the sales tax on the sale of private jets. That's particularly absurd, and it actually passed the entire legislature, and that one was even
private
too absurd
jets.
For Governor Ducey to handle, so he vetoed the private jet one. Thank goodness for that. But that every year we see more and more of these things recommended, and I think we need to do an overall reform of our entire sales tax loophole structure. Before that we're able to add new ones.
Okay, I want to take you back to November. About 30 states right now have broad marijuana laws, but Arizona voters said no to recreational marijuana in November. Now Canada is looking at becoming only the second country on earth, I think, to completely legalize marijuana. Do you see Arizona revisiting this issue anytime soon?
It's going to be a lot harder since this majority and this governor and this chamber have eliminated our ability to effectively bring initiatives towards forward because they put in a strict compliance thing in. I think it's something that increasing states are going to be able to look at. I don't know that Arizona is going to be in the forefront. If we do end up with recreational marijuana, I certainly hope we tax it the level we do cigarettes, because if we do, then we can have an adequate source of funding to be able to pay for the kind of addiction programs and other type of health-related programs that we need to have to go along with that. The initiative process itself is going to be so difficult at this point because of the new strict compliance. I know there's a referendum out that's going to try to refer that to the ballot so people can look and see whether or not we want to compromise our sacred right of initiative that our founders left for us. But for now, it's going to be very difficult to put initiatives on the ballot.
Are you saying it's all but dead, the referendum process?
It's very, very difficult. I mean, it's what strict compliance means, you've got to follow the letter of the law. If the letter of the law says a certain margin is required, a half inch on either side, and if it's less than a half inch, then you could throw out the entire petition. That's not really the intent of our founders to make that happen. If the Speaker of the House, who's known as J.D. Mesnard, signs his name J.D. Mesnard, it can be thrown out because he didn't sign his full name Javen. That's the type of strict compliance thing that could happen.
Well, why are those rules there then?
The rules are there in order for people to sign their full name, but it wasn't intended that people's full name isn't J.D. I mean, the rule is also there. It says that the voter shall print his name on the ballot. It doesn't say hers. But the intent is obviously all people, whether if they're qualified electors, should be able to sign
that. So you think that this is intentionally trying to thwart initiatives?
It absolutely is. And when you talk to the sponsors, that's the whole purpose. When you hear Sylvia Allen on the floor who voted for it say that you can't trust people with lawmaking, that you need to have a higher bar. You have to leave it to the legislators like Sylvia Allen who have more knowledge about how to legislate. Now, when I read out the Arizona Constitution to them and said that Article 4, which enumerates the powers of the legislature, the first section says power is reserved to the people, and that's the initiative process. It's before any of the things in our Constitution that talk about the legislative processes. The power of the people for initiative and referendum is much more important than the power of the people to elect legislators.
All right, let's see if we can work one more call in. Ingrid, go ahead, please.
This is back to the maintenance of roads.
Yes.
I'd like to suggest that regarding the electric vehicles, not using gasoline and not paying that fee on each gallon of gasoline, why don't we have car owners pay some kind of fee at the time of purchase when a car is new, mm-hmm. and then every year check in with the Department of Transportation, have the mileage looked at on their car, and charge them for that by factoring in the weight of the car.
Okay.
I've actually been supportive of that in the past. I think electric vehicles and electric vehicle owners have told me that they agree they should have to pay their fair share for the roadways.
Because they are highway users.
They're using them, and yes. they want the roads to be there, too. It's only a matter of fairness. I think, and there was a bill on the floor that Senator Bob Worsley brought forward, a package of things, and one of those included an in-lieu fee that was paid every year for owners of electric vehicles, of which he is one. But his Republican colleagues decided to not let that move forward even after it passed a floor vote, 16-14.
All right, we're about out of time, but when you do make the announcement that you are a candidate for governor, how will that look? A little quick preview stump speech. What will be the issues? Obviously, education.
Well, education is a huge issue. I'm going to talk about how we need to have lifelong education, in which you've got a great foundation for education in K-12. You're going to have universities that create the new jobs of the future and then businesses that will stay here. And you're going to have a community college system that's revitalized to be a lifelong training and retraining thing. So when automation and globalization eliminate people's jobs, we can give them a path back to prosperity. And all those things need to be invested in. All these things have been slashed by this governor and this legislature, and that's the number one thing. But I want to talk about transportation infrastructure and my history and being able to lead that in the RTA here in Pima County before I was even an elected official. My experience, my knowledge with the budget, sitting on the budget committee and sitting on the finance committee, and my knowledge of these individual legislators and the legislative process. I think the people of Arizona want to elect a governor who isn't going to be learning on the job, but understands the levers of power and how to use them to roll back some of the damage that has been done to the state and roll it back as soon as possible. I know this legislature and these legislators in particular better than probably any governor in recent memory. I don't know why governors have been afraid to go down to the legislature and knock heads together. I will not be afraid to do that. And that's what it's going to take. And I think we can get that done. So I'm excited, and that's part of the case I'll be making. It's time to elect somebody that'll get things done in the governor's office, who's been an active and aggressive voice against this destruction we've seen by this majority and this governor. And I know I can win this race.
All right, Steve Farley, thank you very much. Senator Farley, good to see you.
Great to see you, too.
Thanks a lot. 12:33 on the Buckmaster Show, waiting in the wings, Mr. Dylan Smith. He'll be with us in a moment from TucsonSentinel.com. Be right back. Tucson now has its own Creole restaurant, capturing the spirit of New Orleans cuisine. Saz Creole Kitchen and Cocktails is located in St. Philip's Plaza at River and Campbell. The New Orleans-inspired menu includes a full range of gumbos and much-loved beignets. See you at Saz Creole Kitchen and Cocktails. Open daily, 8 a.m. to midnight at St. Philip's Plaza.
This is Bill Buckmaster. I love travel and flying from Tucson International Airport. And when you fly Tucson, you're standing up for Tucson. When more people fly Tucson, airlines respond with more flights. And with more flights, more travelers can get here to conduct important business. It's a win for the region, and it's a win for you in time saved and money saved not traveling to an airport 2 hours away. Next time you book a flight, type in TUS. Travel smart and fly Tucson. It's the way to go.
The Southern Arizona News Examiner, reporting from a different perspective. You'll read stories from around the world ignored by the mainstream media. Stories from the Gatestone Institute, the Washington Free Beacon, the Washington Times News Service, and other great outlets. It is world news from a different perspective. The Southern Arizona News Examiner. Free subscriptions at soaznewsx.com.
Today, more than ever, consumers want to work with a business they trust. Hi, this is Suzanne Miller with your Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona, reminding you that thousands of consumers go to tucson.bbb.org every week to inquire about trustworthy businesses. Is your business accredited with BBB? To find out more, call Celeste Angelini at 520-345-5837 or go to tucson.bbb.org and remember to always start with trust.
Southern Arizona is home to one of the world's most trusted sources of information on medicines. The Credible Meds website is visited each day by over 2,000 people from more than 60 countries. You too can learn how to personalize your medications and take control of your health care. Visit CredibleMeds.org today and join Bill Buckmaster each month as he and Dr. Ray Woosley, founder of Credible Meds, give you practical tips on how to get the most from your medications.
As a small business owner, I know the importance of a certified public accountant you can trust. That's why I recommend my CPA, Michael C. Flowers of Flowers, Rieger & Associates, proud sponsors of the Buckmaster Show. Located at 2919 East Broadway and on the web at flowersrieger.com or follow the live link on buckmastershow.com. This is Bill Buckmaster. Green Things has been the place for all things green for the Buckmaster household for many years. From 2-inch succulents to 10-foot tall palms and desert trees, Green Things has it all on 13 acres and 33 greenhouses full of plants, pottery, and gardening supplies. Visit Green Things at 3384 East River Road by the Rito Riverwalk and on the web at greenthingsaz.com. Noble Hops is Tucson's original gastro pub, serving an impressive menu of craft beer and fine fare. Choose from more than 175 beers from around the world, plus wine and a full bar. Enjoy delicious soups, salads, burgers, sandwiches, hearty entrees, and more. Craft beer, fine fare, great service, and stunning views. Noble Hops, perfect for lunch, dinner, happy hour, late night, and any time in between. Open daily at La Cañada and Lambert Lane in Oro Valley. Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show. Now it's time for our Friday roundtable. Dylan Smith, the editor-publisher of TucsonSentinel.com, Tucson's online news service, joins us. Dylan, how are you? How was your week?
Pretty good. Pretty good. Busy. You know, trying to shake some trees. I think Dan and his crew were the most successful in trying to squeeze some stories out of people this week. Kudos to you guys.
Dan Scheer with us, editor of the Green Valley News and Saharita Sun. So, Dan, the chronology of this monster fire, and I think we can characterize it like that, anytime you get over certainly, what, 40, almost 50,000 acres?
Right.
What was the chronology? When did you first learn about it? When did you get a tip that you that someone suspected there was a suspect?
Well, I was getting out of church Sunday at noonish, and somebody had texted me a photo and said, "Hey, what do you think this is?" And I knew right then I wasn't going to have my Sunday nap. And so I actually drove out to the spot about a couple hours later, and I actually drove the whole Sarita Road all the way down to Houghton just to kind of get a sense over there, and then went up White House Canyon toward Madera Canyon, White House Canyon Road toward Madera Canyon, and ran into a a closed road, and they were fighting the fire back then. By then, I had touched base with several folks and knew that this one was really bad. And so I spent several hours out there on Sunday afternoon. The rumors were swirling then that it was a target shooter. Took me a couple days to nail it down. We finally did right before deadline on Tuesday night through seven different sources who are all impeccable. And we would never rush into this because being first is not as important as being accurate. So we knew that we had it right, and then we got the Border Patrol stuff had been swirling out there for a while, and finally the Border Patrol confirmed it to us, and then about a half hour later to all the other media.
The Border Patrol, and we do thank you, Dan, also for letting us know on our morning program, Wake Up Tucson, on Wednesday, that a person shooting at an exploding target Sunday afternoon inadvertently started what is now the, according to the Southwest Coordination Center's records, which date back to 1990, this fire is now the 14th biggest wildfire in Arizona state history. So, the Border Patrol is not releasing the name of the suspect. Is that correct?
No, they haven't. All they did is they confirmed that one of their employees, and then they used the word agent, is involved in the investigation there, and that this person was out recreational shooting. And so that's all they're saying. And then State Forest, who's handling the investigation, and there's several agencies involved in this, by the way. It's just like spaghetti. And
which is why it took a long time to find the right couple of people to get, you know, the word out.
Exactly. And you're dealing with 6 to 8 people, and you're dealing with this fire, which of course is very important. And number one is people's safety and animals, and then structures, and but this is a very important part of this story too. So getting the right person to tell you what you need to hear has been very difficult, and we let them know that we were going with this story on Tuesday night, and they had every opportunity to, you know, just open up about it, but decided not to. So different agencies handle investigations differently, and we knew that we would not be harming it by putting this information out there.
Well, Dylan, what would you like to add?
Well, just one thing that I'm going to be curious about long term is, you know, not so much what's going to happen to this one guy who sparked this off by rather obviously shooting at explosive targets in the, you know, a hot, dry day in the middle of the desert. But what is going to be the long-term impact of this fire that mostly burned through a lot of low brush and grasslands, the kind of stuff that is really supposed to burn? That's what rejuvenates it, right?
Yeah, and oddly enough, I mean, this could be in many ways a very good thing. Obviously, it's very pricey. It's already at $3 million, and we're not even a week into it. And I was working at the Arizona Republic when the Rodeo Chediskay fires converged, and all of Sholo was evacuated, and we had actually family up there who lost houses on both sides of them, but their house didn't go. That's how fires are in this, that the embers will just float around land and just spark. And so it's been a scary thing because it can pose significant dangers. We saw that in the Yarnell fire here a couple of years ago in Arizona. And so these things are always just terrifying to watch play out, and safety is always number one. But I think that we're going to learn a lot of lessons through this. And ultimately, though, like Dylan said, this is kind of how nature works.
It's good that it didn't take off. It's very fortunate that the wind wasn't blowing the other way. It's not often that fires run downhill, but sometimes they do. We saw that happen just south of Sierra Vista a few years ago, where that huge wildfire was running downhill, moving down into the valley. Imagine if it had gone in the other direction.
Yeah, and that is a monster fire over there that Sierra Vista had dealt with a few years ago, and that is a part of our newspaper chain, the Sierra Vista Herald, and so we were involved in that. I'm watching it very closely, and the community really came together on that one also. And of course, it came much closer to homes, and it was a little bit of a different scenario here. It's a sweeping situation. I got to say, almost jokingly, that this will wake up the rest of Arizona as to really what our area is all about, and who we are, and where we are, and what these, you know, where Green Valley is, and Sarita and Sierra Vista. Because I still maintain that Phoenix doesn't pay attention to anything south of Casa Grande. So I guess we're on the map in that way. So maybe that's a silver lining.
Our friend Charles Heller, who knows more about firearms than anybody I know, just sent me an email. He says, if you're going to go out and do that kind of shooting, you should always have a fire extinguisher with you, which is pretty darn good advice. So is there a designated area that someone could shoot in that area that that would have been safer?
There's a group out of Green Valley that has put together something down by the Kanoa rest stop just off of I-19. I think it's just south of there if you're on the frontage road. And they clean up the area and it's all okay. And I'm trying to remember if it's state land or BLM. But anyway, they that's a designated area and it's looked over and they make sure that everything is right there. I know of a couple of unofficial areas that people go to that are safer but probably not legal. I believe the law says no shooting within a half mile of a home. This unofficial area I'm talking about is there are no homes around there, but lots of targets set on people are out there.
Not very far away from where this fire started, you have the county-run public firing range on the southeast side. Of course, you can't go there and use explosive targets.
Yeah.
And, participate in other recreational activities that often go with wildcat shooting. You know, a lot of people like to go out and have a few beers and then plink at the cans, which is, you know, perhaps not the most smart idea, but it's, pretty common.
Well, apparently that might be old school. We talked to a couple of gun shops that said, this mixture of a couple of gunpowders that makes it a very unstable mixture and then people shoot at it and blow up. It's basically just an adrenaline rush. It used to be a lot more popular than it is now. One of them told us they sell one or two a month. So apparently this was maybe more of a fad thing. Not real expensive, though, so it's easy to get a hold of.
Dylan, you were listening as we were speaking with Senator Farley. We had David Garcia jumping in, and so there'll probably be other candidates, but right now it looks like it would be Farley and Garcia. And
I think Farley pretty much completely tipped his hand as he was discussing things.
Can we call him a presumed candidate?
He's talking in the present tense about his candidacy. He's not really hedging anymore, even though he's saying he's not going to announce it for maybe another 6 weeks.
So education is obviously the big issue for both Dr. Garcia and Senator Farley.
I think it's a big issue for a whole lot of people. I mean, amongst Republicans, you see some interesting sort of maneuvers going on there. The state superintendent of public instruction just came out with a plan to put a whole lot more money into education. And there's, definitely sort of a simmering conflict between her and Doug Ducey about education funding, and I don't know if this is meant to be really a serious move or just another poke in his direction.
And the knock on Dr. Garcia would be, if you can't beat Diane Douglas, how are you going to beat anybody for governor?
Yeah, but that speaks to a bigger question, Bill, and that is, can a Democrat win any of the top five seats, offices in Arizona? And David Garcia was really up against that, and I interviewed him and Diane Douglas during their race, both of them, and he had some terrific thoughts on education and obviously had thought this stuff through and I thought what would be some effective techniques to work in Arizona, but she was swept in. She was elected and of course, by the majority. She's Republican, though. So the real question, though, is can a Democrat really win in Arizona when, Steve Farley really has to ask himself that?
And especially a Democrat from Tucson, that's kind of two knocks against you as a statewide candidate. He's, managed to build himself up a little bit of a public profile in the media in Phoenix. So he's not a complete unknown, but he's certainly not known in the way that somebody who's, from Phoenix would be.
The administrator for Pima County, Chuck Huckleberry, rolled out a proposed budget this week, Dan Scheer, and whether or not this is going to be what would be considered a tough budget year, I guess we're going to have to wait and see. But the hearing, the parade of department heads, the public hearings, those will begin, I believe, next week.
Right, and we were just going through the budget this morning. We've been kind of delayed a little bit. He put it out there, I think, a couple of days ago. Mm-hmm. But this whole fire thing,
of course,
and so some other priority distracting.
Yes.
And I said to my reporter, "So what are you seeing?" And he goes, "Man, this is boring." Okay, boring but important, as we say in the business. And so we're going line by line. Roads, obviously, a huge issue down where we are. We've pretty much written off the county as being able to help much in our area. And so groups are kind of getting together and fixing their own roads. That's happening. I know that can't happen everywhere in Pima County, but it is happening down there. So we are still combing through it, but definitely it is a tough budget year for this county. We'll see where the priorities are.
So much of it is still up in the air and really depends on what the legislature does, and we don't know what the legislature is going to do with the state budget. And so much of the county's budget is dependent on what the state will fund, what money will come from the state, what tasks that the state has been doing, they will continue to the process of trying to push things down to the counties and cities. So it's kind of just a napkin sketch, even though it's something like 350 pages of napkin sketching at the moment.
Right.
There are a whole lot of sort of, well, it might be something like this.
But we have seen that, and we've seen it recently, where the state has pushed stuff back on us, and it's really affected the budget. And I think Chuck Huckleberry has been very open and honest about that. Some people think, no, that's just an excuse to not fund certain things or to pull back in other areas. But the state has dumped an awful lot on us. And you know what? Perhaps that might be an issue in this next campaign also for Steve Farley to focus on.
Yeah, it's not just money being cut off from sales tax revenue that's not being sent back to cities especially, but different administrative tasks that the state is deciding, we're just not going to do that anymore.
Right.
You guys can handle that.
Right.
With no money being sent along to help them.
All right. Dylan Smith, we'll look for your work at TucsonSentinel.com, which is doing very well. You're in your eighth year.
Indeed.
Correct. Congratulations.
Thank you.
And Dan Scheer, thank you and congratulations on the work you and your team, which it's not a huge team, but everybody pulled their weight this week, certainly. Not that they normally don't, but
everyone's had to double down.
Together and
yep.
Did a great job. We
thank
appreciate
you.
It. Thank you very much. We've got Weekend Watch next. The Regional Transportation Authority works with its member jurisdictions, the business community, project neighbors, and the broader community to deliver transportation projects promised in 2006. This collaborative effort is a model of diverse interests coming together for the benefit of the region. This spirit of regional collaboration helps us address the mobility and safety needs in all of our communities. Better roads, better transit, better choices, a better future. More at rtamobility.com. On a changing planet, the University of Arizona's Biosphere 2 has been diving deeper and looking closer while energizing, innovating, conserving, and advancing science on an unparalleled scale to better understand the natural systems around us and to inspire our future generations. For 10 years now, UA Biosphere 2 has explored our planet's future. Come, explore it yourself. Open daily, biosphere2.org.
At the Pima County Public Library, we are powering possibilities. Every day, in person and online, we help you connect, learn, create, and achieve your dreams. Come browse our shelves or take a class, pursue your passion, and connect with others. Do you dream big? We do. Anything is possible at your local library. Call 791-4010 or visit library.pima.gov to be inspired today.
Are you a landlord by choice or by force? Experiencing a job transfer and don't know what to do with your current house? Want to move but can't sell your current house? Hello, my name is Ken Adams, co-owner of Rincon Ventures Property Management. Rincon Ventures has a fully automated accounting process, electronic payments, and 24-hour access to your accounts. With some of the lowest rates in Tucson, Rincon Ventures has grown rapidly in this down economy. Let us show you why. Give us a call at 881-2258 right now and experience the difference. Rincon Ventures, where service is a fact, not another empty promise. 881-2258.
If you're searching for that special one-of-a-kind item, may I suggest Adobe House Antiques. It has a vast collection and variety of antiques, lighting, and fine art. In addition to the interior space, a large outdoor location offers an extensive collection of vintage patio furniture, exterior lighting, and ironwork. Come see Penny at 2700 North Campbell, 325-9439, or on the web at adobehouseantiques.com.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
It's a land and cruise vacation sale at Bon Voyage Travel. Plan your dream vacation now and save big, up to 65%. Alaska, Hawaii, Europe, South America, the Caribbean, pick your perfect destination. Bon Voyage Travel will create your exclusive getaway that includes extra perks and bonuses you won't find anywhere else. Call Bon Voyage Travel today or visit bvtravel.com.
Vero Amore is Tucson's only certified authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, panini, and salad is homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore, Plaza Palomino and on Dove Mountain Boulevard in Marana, plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore on the web at veroamore.com. All right, Weekend Watch brought to you and us by Silver City in Grant County, New Mexico, where they are getting ready for the 22nd annual Silver City Blues Festival, Memorial Day weekend. Check it out. It's going to be a great event, Silver City and Grant County. Only a three-hour drive, approximately, from the Metro Tucson area. You can find out about the many things to do by visiting southwestnewmexico.org. A couple dozen recreation ideas and a couple of dozen great places to stay in Silver City and Grant County, New Mexico. The host of Weekend Watch on the Buckmaster Show is award-winning Tucson publicist, Inside Tucson business, food, and beverage columnist, a dedicated foodie, Mr. Matt Russell. How are you, Matt?
Well, it's TGIF, Bill. How are you?
Doing well, and you got your party hat on, and happy hour is just around the corner.
I'm telling you, on a day like today, I love to revel in the Friday vibe, you know, these comfortable temperatures, a cool breeze. And that's why my happy hour pick today is Revel, that hip European-style wine bar on 9th Street, right near 4th Avenue. Revel features an impressive selection of wines from around the world by the glass and the bottle, along with cheese and charcuterie and even chocolate boards to complement your every sip. They open at 4 o'clock today, the perfect time to commence your weekend fun. I say try Revel for happy hour.
Something tells me you'll be leaving the office about 3:45 this afternoon.
You know me all too well.
All too well. How about the brewers? How are we doing with some brewing companies?
Yeah, you know, when a brewery celebrates an anniversary, we can certainly expect to enjoy some special beers, custom brewed for the occasion. But at Dragoon Brewing Company's fifth anniversary party tomorrow, the food will take center stage. Now, check it out. These guys have arranged to have five of Tucson's top chefs on site who are going to be collaborating on a pop-up restaurant of sorts. We're talking Ramiro Scavo, Travis Peters, Ken Harvey, Tyler Fenton, three-time Iron Chef Ryan Clark. This is going to be a culinary and craft beer extravaganza tomorrow from noon until 10. Come on out, come thirsty, and say happy fifth birthday to Dragoon.
Oh, a lot of Hall of Fame chefs involved with that one. Anybody rolling out a spring menu this weekend?
Yeah, from a culinary perspective, I love the spring season. We start enjoying lighter and brighter flavors after a winter of eating hearty and heavy. Now, a great example is the new spring menu at North Italia. Now, of course, I love North for their pastas and their red sauces and lots of matzah. But spring is bringing some fun and fresh seasonal produce produce to the party, like their heirloom tomato and burrata salad with basil and cucumber, or the diver scallops with a sweet corn risotto and asparagus. All told, Bill, there are 9 new dishes on North Spring Menu. So head up there this weekend to celebrate the season in style, I say.
I always leave Weekend Watch hungry because you make it sound so good. What's in the column in Inside Tucson Business?
Well, the Kentucky Derby, the Run for the Roses, is 1 week from tomorrow, and one local barman is planning an event that he says is custom-made for the bowtie, hat, and seersucker crowd. The call to post is near, and you can prepare by checking out this week's edition of Inside Tucson Business. Do you own a seersucker suit, Bill?
Oh, a long time ago, but nah, that's long gone right now. We'll get you in one of them next week, I'm sure. Thank you, Matt. Have a great weekend.
Cool. You
All
too.
Right. This week on Liberty Watch, author Steve Gorham joins Charles Heller about the way natural changes in climate are used as, according to Mr. Gorham, as frauds to try to regulate freedom. That's on Liberty Watch, 11 a.m., right after Swap Shop with Charles Heller on Sunday. The Buckmaster Show is a presentation of Bill Buckmaster Communications, LLC, which is wholly responsible for its content. Shout-out time, a big shout-out to Christophon, our fine German composer friend who composed original music for the Buckmaster Show. Thank you, Tom Fairbanks, today for your engineering producing. Tom doing very well, as usual, on the other side of the glass. Also, thanks during the week to Ray Allen, Jerry Cross, Mr. and Mrs. Martin, of course, the owners of the station, Ed Alexander, Rosemary Brandt, who makes sure all of our podcasts are up in such a timely fashion. On behalf of all of us, have a great weekend.